If there are any questions, we'll have a few minutes, and the speaker will be delighted to answer. I think you might.
They either have a lot to drink, or I've convinced them all.
Convinced all except one.
Or both. I didn't drink enough.
I just wanted to slip in a tongue-in-cheek comment. If I remember, the Johnson justifications for the great expansion of programs was the war on poverty.
Yes.
Clearly another defense maneuver.
They got increasingly far-fetched over time, didn't they? First highway, then education, and then poverty.
From the increase in government, you wouldn't assume we have won that war.
Yes. Federal Defense Highway Transportation Act. The picture is a great deal more complicated than anything that I could begin to describe tonight. There does seem to be some effect of the homogeneity of the population on the governmental share. The more homogeneous the population and its backgrounds, the higher the governmental share. If you've got three or four different language cultures in a nation like Switzerland, it's hard to get consent on anything. And so they at a national level. So they don't have much, and since they take consent seriously, they don't have a big national government. Let me make a response to your comment about the defense role of highways. There may be many things that would be worthwhile to do which are not authorized by the existing Constitution. But it's important not to do them in that case. Because it's important not to break the rules just because a specific break of the rules would be valuable. It's important, and if you do that, then you're left entirely up to the judgment as to whether breaking the rules in that particular case is worthwhile, rather than whether you've got a good rule. Now, if you felt in the 50s, or at any other time, that some function that the federal government ought to perform some function that was not constitutionally authorized, the appropriate procedure, I contend, is not to break the rules or to call it by some silly analog to the existing functions, but to get the rule changed. And what's happened most importantly, just and this is quite recent, within the last 15 years, is that people have no longer felt any obligation to either rationalize the functions in terms of the rules or to get the rules changed in order to do what they wish to do. The federal government, for reasons that I don't fully understand, the federal constitution has been moderately effective in protecting our civil rights. But the federal constitutional limits on the economic functions of the government are a dead letter. There is very little that I can conceive of that the federal government would not do in terms of economic activities as a consequence of the Constitution. And the sad fact about it is that people don't even mention the Constitution as relevant in these matters anymore. It may be that the highway transportation program served a legitimate defense purpose, although I think that was rather spurious. And it may be that it's worthwhile to have the feds involved in highways. But there is nothing in the Constitution which would authorize that function. And the appropriate procedure, I contend, would have been to change the Constitution, to add another function to Article 1, Section 8.
Wasn't the Pennsylvania Turnpike, I can't remember now,
was it a state,
was it funded under the Depression?
It was state money.
It was a state function. But it was a state.
State money.
My question has to do with something of a different character. It has often been said, especially by the left, that corporations in America have an enormous power and influence. And I don't know whether this is true. I do know that a great deal of corporation funding of public television exists, at least by counting up the number of sponsors that seem to sponsor Masterpiece Theater and various other types of things. Do you, in your own contact with corporate life, find that this focus or this belief that those are the worthwhile things to do is changing? The reason I ask the question is that if there is a strength to corporations, if they have an influence in the country, then it may turn out that the kind of changes that we're talking about require their support. Their support meaning the management, the stockholders, the general ideological atmosphere. Is it, in your experience, changing to some extent such that these kinds of efforts, scholarship, drama, whatever, that is a little more sympathetic toward this line of thinking, is going to be enhanced in the future?
My experience is brief in corporation, a big corporation, but I think that I can make the following generalizations. One is that although I did not expect to find much corporate power over external events and conditions, I was surprised to see how little it is. Corporations, even very big corporations, are quite powerless. Outside the corporation. In other words, there's a very, very little leverage. They're basically a victim of events. The other is that corporate officers, except in matters that bear specifically on their job, have rather conventional political views. And if the prevailing mood of the community is what you might call an interventionist liberal, except in the immediate area in which they're impacted in their job, their views are very likely to be like that of the rest of the community. And for a long period of time, there's still a good bit of vestige of this. There seemed to be an awful lot of almost conscience money going out of corporations to apologize for making money and to finance all those things that that right-thinking people told them they ought to put their money into.
Is that changing?
And that's changing, not because it's changing in the corporation, but because it's changing out there. And if you can get the community out there to change their views, then the views within the corporations and the people who control these funds will change.
It's been a great change, I would guess, that was brought out here today in the thought of the country in the way of disillusionment with government programs and a general feeling of anti-state government. And yet, despite that, you say you're pessimistic. What would it require to make you an optimist?
Well, this last particular view, this last theory that I described, which is that government just grows over time unless you lose a war, I said that particular view is very pessimistic. I'm a wild optimist in the sense that I think people can change things. But I don't think that individuals and small cabals can change things, and that you have to... that people, particularly people like us who are committed to consensual change, not to impose change, but to consensual change, we have to have the strength and the courage and the endurance and sometimes the patience to try to convince people, lots and lots of people, sometimes people who are unpleasant, sometimes people who have very different views with us on other matters. But I've seen things, you know, we lost in California in 73. We lost in Michigan in 1976 on tax limitation. We're going to win in Michigan this fall. And so I don't think anything good is going to happen easily. But for all of that, I'm still an optimist in the sense that I think people can make a difference. If they've thought about the issue and they're willing to stay with it and make some sacrifices on their own part.
I think that's why there is a change, because there are a lot of people in this room that have been dedicated for 20 years.
That's right. That's right. Ford and that other big company made a contribution this week.
They did.
You alluded to the...
Oh, why? Well, look, let me tell you about that. As I said before, except on matters that directly bear on their business knowledge and their own media business, businessmen's political views tend to be rather conventional. That's understandable in the sense that I don't understand engineering very well either, so my views about engineering are very conventional. I have no creative ideas about engineering, and I shouldn't be expected to. So it isn't so much a criticism of them, it's just a comment on them, that their political views and outside of areas in which they're quite well informed because of their business contacts are quite conventional, and they're affected by, you know, what public figures are saying, or what their pastor is saying, or what's being reported in newspaper editorials, or what the governor is saying, things like that. And until quite recently, all the establishment figures were against tax limitation. In Michigan this year, all the establishment figures except one are in favor of tax limitation. That's the difference. So we'll get money this year.
You alluded to the market efficiencies as though it were a fact of economic life. I'm puzzled as to how you can support that notion when there's a major U.S. corporation with a perhaps 60, 65-year history of exponential growth in sales and earnings, now selling its market equity with a 33% return.
You're talking about. Ford Motor Company is selling at 3x earnings right now.
That's what I had.
We're 75 years old this summer.
Excuse the error.
The problem there is that those are not real earnings. We're being taxed on monies that shouldn't be counted as earnings. We have to put all of that money and more back into the business in order to maintain our present equity. So it should really be counted as cost of doing business. The way that the tax accounts look is that it's counted as earnings. And the problem there, of course, is what's happened due to the government fuel economy standards. As you may know, unless the law changes, cars in the United States will have to be more fuel economic than the cars in Europe within a few more years, even though gasoline in Europe is $2 to $3 a gallon and it's 65 cents in the United States. U.S. cars will have to use less gas per mile than the ones that we market successfully in Europe. And the consequence of that law is that we're, both Ford and the other auto companies, are having to put tens of billions of dollars into product changes that have nothing to do with perceived efficiencies out there in the world, just to meet the law.
Do you think the market is discounting that?
And the market is discounting it. And I couldn't tell a a story with a straight face to a broker, that would change that perspective. I don't have good stories.
Thank you very much. Hope we'll see each other or in Chicago in April.
Take this back.
Can't even keep moving by Moses Lightman.
Everyone. I want to thank you and the society for making it.